This is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkman from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. Today I'm speaking with Mike Foresta, a career winner of more than $10,000 in the FFPC and an owner of a top 40 team in this year's Football Guys Players Championship and a top 100 team in the FFPC main event. In this episode, we discuss how he was able to manage his Football Guys team nearly to the top even after picking David Johnson at the 101, Kenyon Drake's Week 13 role, and who his 2018 number one tight end is. You can follow Mike on Twitter at MForestaESQ. Also, to kick things off in this podcast, we'll hear from 2016 FFPC main event co-champ David Hubbard, dish on Martavis Bryant and Juju Smith-Schuster, and his advice for new players in the championship round in the FFPC for the first time. You can follow Hubbard on Twitter at 208-858-740. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the RotoViz content and tools, and it helps support the podcast channel as well. Now, without further ado, let's check in with the champ, David Hubbard. David, league championship week is here in the FFPC and Football Guys Players Championship. The waiver wire will lock on Friday night for good for the rest of 2017 for both those competitions. What's the best advice you can give players who've never played in this format before, who are going to be in the championship round or are playing to get into the championship round this weekend, and they won't be able to make any moves over the next 4 weeks? What's the best piece of advice you can give them?
I would tell them to make sure you got a backup quarterback. A lot of times people go naked at quarterback. Make sure you got a backup tight end, because last thing, I've had this happen before. I've gambled, what I call gambling, and just go naked at tight end or naked because I want to carry extra running backs. But if you have a really good team, I've lost some teams at the end where they had a chance to really do some finish high, and the tight end got hurt in week 15, and I went naked at tight end, so I didn't have a backup tight end. The same thing with quarterback. Even kicker, I mean, some people don't like doing it, but I also had a kicker go down. So I would just try to make my roster at this point. If you have somebody to cut, I would cut them in favor of carrying backups at those positions, because the last thing you want to get to week 16 with a chance to win an overall and you don't have a quarterback. So I've been there.
I think of our Football Guys Players Championship overall winner from a few years ago, Sean Coots, almost didn't have a quarterback week 16, was forced to play Eli Manning because it was the only quarterback on his roster after an injury happened. And
I remember that team well.
Yeah, and Gary Allen, who won the FFPC main event a couple of years ago, he only ran in with Drew Brees, and there was a chance that Drew Brees was concussed and wasn't going to play Week 16. And, you know, the Saints had nothing to play for. Brees still played, and he crushed it, and Gary Allen ended up winning the competition. However, those stories could have been much different had those guys, not played for them, and they wouldn't have had a different quarterback. So you definitely bring up a good point there. One of the players that a lot of people will – I don't want to say they're counting on, but they're very excited to see what's going to happen with him – is Josh Gordon, who is making his 2017 debut this coming weekend, first time in more than 3 years, or nearly 3 years, that he will be playing. If he comes out this weekend, limited snaps, and puts up double-digit fantasy points, is he a guy that, if you own him anywhere, that you'd be willing to trot out in your lineup during the championship round?
Sure. I mean, if he comes back, I mean, I can't name a player personally that sat out of football for 3 years and came back and played. And I'm rooting for Josh Gordon. I don't own a lot of Josh Gordon. I have him on one really, really good team. But I can't think of anybody in the history of the NFL that's been set out for 3 years and came back in and was immediately tearing it up. But the guy is super talented. He has speed, and speed makes you an asset in football. So, and he has good hands. So if he can, he's been practicing. So there's a chance, and I would definitely play him. He's like a wild card. Might not be owned a lot in the shootout. I don't know what his percentage would be, but I would guess it would be low. So he'd definitely be a guy I would fire up if the right on the right team in the right situation.
He will be playing opposite Corey Coleman, a pretty good weapon, and being able to catch passes from DeShone Kizer certainly is an improvement than some of the quarterbacks he's been catching passes from. So we will be watching that Browns game to see what happens with Josh Gordon against the Los Angeles Chargers in Week 13. In that same division that the Chargers play in, who they are chasing at the top of the division barely is the Kansas City Chiefs. Andy Reid was questioned this week about switching from Alex Smith to Patrick Mahomes. He said that he's not going to do that. However, it's certainly possible that he could do that in the championship round of the FFPC main event. If he does make that switch for you, David, does anything change for you in regards to whether you're starting or how much you're starting Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill, or Travis Kelce, or is it status quo for those three players?
It's not really status quo with Kareem Hunt right now. Kareem Hunt, something's went bad wrong in that deal, because he was really good and now he's been horrible. So I don't know if it's the offensive line, the play calling, Alex Smith has regressed. I don't know what it is, but Patrick Holmes might be actually give him more value. Maybe Alex Smith's just not seeing the field very well right now. They don't throw the ball down the field anymore. They play real conservative, but Hunt, I read a stat today where they were like third in the NFL at yards first contact, and now they're like third to last. So he's getting contacted in the backfield a lot, where when he was first started out, he was getting contacted after 4 or 5 yards down the field. So that's changed their whole offense, and it's kind of shrunk the field on them a little bit. So I don't think Andy Reid will go away from Alex Smith this year. I think next year will be the Patrick Mahomes time, so I don't think it'll be an issue. I think it's going to be Alex Smith. So people that own a lot of Kelce or Hunt or those guys will have to make some tough, and Tyreek Hill will have to make some decisions. I don't know how much upside they have moving forward.
Yeah, it's what a switch it was with those Chiefs players, what we thought of them at the start of the year and where we're at right now with them. Very, very interesting. And there's a lot of teams that rode those guys in the first part of the season to get to their league playoff championship and then to get into the championship rounds. So like you said, tough decisions facing those Chief owners this weekend. Final question for you, David, this week. Martavis Bryant actually looked pretty good in Juju Smith-Schuster's absence. I believe he had 4 catches, 40 yards, also had a carry in there, drew a couple of penalties, including one in the end zone for PI. I don't know if Smith-Schuster is coming back this week, but I don't think this is a long-term injury for Smith-Schuster either. Eventually, both these guys will be on the field again. When they are together, do either of them make a good start for championship round lineups?
I think they do. I mean, both of those guys have massive upside, and it seems like when Juju's healthy, the Steelers definitely favor Juju. So you would have to think if Juju, anytime though with a wide receiver and a hamstring, that thing could linger, and it might be he might sit out a while. I don't know. I don't know how serious it is. The Steelers have been kind of quiet on it. At first, they said it wasn't that serious, but he didn't play. Didn't even get close to playing. So it's funny. Juju was a monster, and now Martavius Bryant might be the one that has the value in the shootout if Juju can't get back on the field. But if Juju does get back on the field, I'd have to say the Steelers are going to favor him, and Martavius is going to go back to his role of just a 10 or 12 plays on the field, and then they take a couple of deep shots to him. So I would say if Juju's deemed 100% healthy and is back on the field, Juju's the guy you're going to have to play.
Yeah, this is the reason why it's a marathon, not a sprint. It seems like these storylines change, almost weekly, apparently, with even, just the small sample size of players we got to chat with you about this week. Good luck to you, my friend, in the league championships this week. Best of luck to you in the championship round. We'll touch base again to see how things are going in a couple of weeks, but best of luck to you this weekend, man.
Can't wait. All right, Balky, take care.
Thanks to David Hubbard for his input this week. Now here's $10,000 FFPC winner Mike Foresta.
Mike Foresta, thank you so much for joining the RotoViz High Stakes Lowdown this week. Tell the listeners, when you're not playing fantasy football, what are you doing for a living?
I'm a lawyer most of the time. a business owner part of the time. Mostly I practice personal injury law here in Massachusetts.
You wear many hats in your field, and obviously you've been wearing many hats in the high stakes industry this year because you have a top 40 team in the Football Guys Players Championship. You have a top 100 team in the FFPC main event. I think there might be like two or three other owners that can talk about that. Maybe not even that, maybe just one or two. So it's certainly impressive what you've done both in the mid-stakes and the high-stakes national contests this year. What can you tell us about the decisions that you made with these teams as far as drafting goes, as far as lineup setting, as far as waivers and getting your bids right? What were the big moves, the big decisions that you made that really have impacted these teams to get them where they are right now?
Sure. It's a complicated process. I think anybody who's playing fantasy football at this level has to have a deep love for it. And, that love sort of leads somewhat to obsession and compulsion. So I rely a lot on my team's partner, Adam Rosman, who also helps me to run these teams. And when we are approaching getting ready for the fantasy football season, we usually start sometime in May, June, and start taking a look at getting ready to be ready to draft 20 deep. And when I say that, I mean that I think when you approach a fantasy football draft for either mid stakes or high stakes, you have to think about every pick as being crucial. And so I think that's what we try to do is have a plan for each round. The worst thing that can happen to you, I think, in a draft is to get stuck, not sure who you're going to take. You got to have a stable of guys that you are going to take and know four or five picks ahead. You've got to have six or seven players ready. And then the draft is only half of it. Managing the team week to week, I think, is just as important. For some of our teams this year who have had significant injury concerns, I think managing the team has been essential to keeping us in contention.
Yeah, and I think the biggest injury concern that you guys have had this year, in the team that's in 31st overall in the Football Guys Players Championship, you guys had the number one pick in that draft. You take David Johnson, which was obviously a very popular pick this year at the 101. Week one, he goes down, misses significant time, does not look like he is going to play the rest of the season. So this happens in week one. You guys obviously have to switch into panic mode to a certain degree, losing not only your first round pick, but the first pick of the draft. What was the action plan that you guys put in place that you executed to not only do damage control on this, but still keep this team dominant and still keep it in the top 40 in the Football Guys Players Championship? Very impressive stuff. How did you guys do it?
Well, I think the answer to that question starts before the draft. I think for me, one of the things I hear most guys talking about or complaining about is their draft position in the first round. You have to have a top three pick, or you have to have a top five pick, or I only see five, but I have the seven pick. The fact of the matter is that you can draft a competitive and championship team from any of the 12 draft spots, and your pick in the eighth round is, or seventh or eighth round, is just as important as your pick in the first. We take David Johnson in the first, but we take Mark Ingram, I believe, in the seventh round of that draft.
Yep.
So, you can't assume anyone is going to be healthy for 16 games in the NFL. There's a good percentage of the players are going to be hurt at least for part of the season. And if you're going to be competitive at this level, you've got to have some players on your bench or ready to step in that can produce the same as a first round pick. Look at the first 12 players taken in most drafts. Would you say that any of them, outside of maybe Antonio Brown and Lev Bell, are truly dominant players? They're not really. And you've got to be able to get guys in the second, third, fourth, fifth round who are going to be just as good as those guys.
Let me bring both of those ideas together here. When you talk about being 20 deep, okay, and the draft 20 deep when you're planning out your execution process for your draft strategy, Take that, now couple it with we're going into the league championship playoff or league championship weekend, and then the playoffs of the championship round of both the FPC and the main event. How important is having a deeper roster now? The waiver wire will be locking after this weekend in the FFPC for the rest of the season. How important is to have that deep roster now that, you know, we won't be able to make any moves, but you also want your dominant guys out there every single week?
Yeah, you've got to be able to manage that. Have a deep. Sorry about that, Eric. This is this phone is my office phone is ringing. You've got to be able to manage that carefully. I feel as though a deep team is always where I want to be. Some people prefer to carry several defenses, several kickers, in the chance that they want to play matchups or there's going to be an injury. For me, I prefer to have position players deep, mostly at the running back and wide receiver position, but also especially in these leagues at the tight end position, because injuries. If you can craft a team that's not going to be hurt if you lose two or three of your best guys, then you've really got something. You've got something that's going to be able to go all the way and compete for the ultimate prize.
You know, I don't know if you would consider it a mistake for certain owners to carry two kickers or two defenses if they have prime matchups to sort of shorten their depth at the other positions. But if there is one mistake that you see this time of year when people are playing for a league championship, when they're playing for a $250,000 grand prize in the championship round, what's the most common mistake you see made as far as roster maintenance or lineup decisions, anything like that? Has there been anything that stands out to you where, year after year, you're like, oh man, I can't believe that guy did that?
There's a couple things that stand out to me. One of them is using up all your free agent money before, week 9 or 10, or leaving yourself only only a few dollars. I think that that's a mistake, especially given the fact that you're now going to have to make your final moves before going through 3 weeks of competition without being able to make a move. It's nice to have some flexibility to be able to pick up some guys late in the year that are going to be healthy and play, as opposed to being stuck with players who perhaps are on IR. But I can tell you that, we make plenty of mistakes too. And I'll give you one perfect example is this past week in our main event champion playoff game, we decided to start Greg Olsen and benched Kyle Rudolph, who had been playing for the entire season. And that turned out to be a colossal failure. So it doesn't matter. You can be the best, fantasy football player in the world, and you're still going to make some mistakes that are going to cost you some sleep some nights. But you just do the best you can. You analyze the matchups the best you can. You follow your gut the best you can. And if you're deep enough, you should be in competition when the season's ending.
I want to get to some news around the NFL and how this is going to affect people submitting lineups on championship weekend here. Kelvin Benjamin, the Buffalo Bills receiver, is dealing with a torn meniscus right now. And normally that's a several-week injury. The Bills have been labeling him as day-to-day. Certainly his prospects of playing in Week 13 don't look great. If he does indeed remain out of action, we've heard a lot of pundits and fantasy analysts talking about how good Tyrod Taylor's schedule looks these final few weeks of the season. So if his schedule is good and if Tyrod Taylor is making plays, who is he making those plays to if Benjamin is out? And is that player or players, are those the type of players that you want to have in your lineup with so much going, so much on the line?
I think I think the Bills' schedule going forward has gotten a little bit tougher, maybe, than it had looked to the experts, you know, earlier in the year. They have a matchup this week against the Patriots, which looked like a cake matchup a few weeks ago, but maybe not so much anymore, as their defense is really starting to play much better. That being said, if I'm targeting a Buffalo Bill for my lineup this week, it's going to be Charles Clay. You know, he only got four targets last week, but he turned those targets into 60 yards, four catches for 60 yards. As you can, you know, you compare him to someone like Zay Jones, who had 10 targets, but only turned that into three catches. You know, I think, you know, given the 1.5 accelerator for tight ends in this league, and, you know, the more sure-handedness of Clay, I would probably go with him. I mean, I do like Zay Jones some for the upside. Anyone who's getting 10 targets in weeks, you know, 13 is definitely someone I'm paying attention to. But, you know, you have to be able to convert that opportunity into success. Jordan Matthews hasn't done it this year. You know, they have the wide receiver who they signed off of for the Bears squad, Thompson, who is somewhat of a deep threat, but not all that reliable. So if I'm picking one player, I'm going with Charles Clay.
Yeah, Clay makes some sense. Obviously, you're going to have McCoy locked and loaded in your lineups as well. And you make a good point about the schedule, too. I mean, maybe at one point this season it looked really good, and maybe not so much anymore. And I don't know how many people are playing Tyrod Taylor anyway. I mean, there's a lot of people who actually dropped him in the FFPC after Peterman was named the starter, and then he didn't get picked back up again. He might be locked in some leagues too. So we'll see what happens with that. Certainly the Buffalo offense will be interesting to see. I'd love to see Kelvin Benjamin get back out there to see what it looks like, especially going forward. Mike, if there is one player that you and Adam need to really go off to make your 2017 season a big one, a massive one, who is that one player? And maybe is there one player this year that that you have rostered that can make difference? Maybe it's not just one player, but is there one guy out there that you are really, really rooting hard for?
I mean, I would say without a doubt, you know, there's always a couple of guys each year who sort of make your season. And the person who comes to mind for me without a doubt this year is Adam Thielen. I was involved in four playoff games in the Football Guys Championship and in the FFPC this past weekend. Two of those teams, I was playing Adam Thielen. In two of those leagues, I was playing against Adam Thielen. So all four of the teams that were playing in your championship, you know, in the FFPC, had Adam Thielen on them. so that tells you pretty much all you need to know.
Absolutely.
The other guy who has really been a help for us this year is on three of our four playoff teams, we have Carson Wentz. And Carson Wentz is someone who we're able to get a little bit later, probably even sometimes 15th round, and has produced just tremendously. When you can have a quarterback that you can rely on week to week like that, it is a tremendous luxury and something that that can really take you far, especially if you got that quarterback late and you were able to stock, you know, your running backs and wide receivers and tight ends with the people who you wanted. So, I mean, that would be probably my thing would be to say Adam Thielen and Carson Wentz.
I'm curious, you know, because we saw Adam Thielen going in, you know, I don't know, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th round. He's kind of all over the spot or all over the place in those mid-round drafts this year. What do you think when we look forward to next year? And obviously, we don't know who the quarterback is going to be for Minnesota, if it's going to be, you know, Keenum or Bridgewater, whoever. I don't even think the Vikings have a quarterback under contract for 2018, so we'll see what happens there. But you think about where Thielen might go in the main event, where he might go in Football Guys Players Championship drafts. I know it's a little unfair to ask now, but where do you think Thielen is going next year in drafts?
Oh, I think he's going to go high, Eric. I think he's going to go high. I think he may even go in the second round, but certainly no later than the third. I mean, he's becoming, you know, quite the PPR machine, but he's not it's not even just that he's catching the ball. He's also a dynamic deep threat as well. So I expect him to go a lot higher. And we were getting him in probably, anywhere between the 7th to 9th round. And, that's what you've got to find. If you can find guys like that who you got at the 7th to 9th round, who the next year are going to go in the 1st or 2nd or 3rd round, that's where you can really make some hay in these types of competitions.
Yeah, obviously, everybody's going to be all about Thielen next year. He could be a candidate for our ascendant tag on the high-stakes fantasy footballer. He could be a guy that just climbs and climbs and climbs and climbs until he's maybe going to like the 2nd or early 3rd round. But the key, like you said, it's all about finding this year's Adam Thielen next year in those late single-digit rounds. So important to do. Another piece of news around the NFL, Damian Williams, shoulder dislocation for the Miami Dolphins, does not look like he is going to be playing this week or maybe in next week either. So Kenyon Drake sounds like he is going to be the man in the backfield there. No timeshare anymore. You look at what he brings to the table. What kind of numbers do you think that he puts up this week for the Dolphins?
I think he's got a tough matchup this week against Denver. I still think the Denver defense is not someone who I would particularly root for my running back to be going up against. But by volume alone and his big play ability, his potential is strong. And if I owned Kenyon Drake, I'd be putting him in my lineup and I'd be feeling pretty confident about it this week and going forward. And this is the kind of development that can really make a difference week 14 to 16, where there's an injury and all of a sudden someone who was in a timeshare is now the guy, and that kind of differential can make you climb up some charts in these competitions.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've seen it happen before, especially this time of year. You think about Jamaal Charles a few years ago, what he did in week 15. You think about D'Angelo Williams when Jonathan Stewart went down back in 2008. D'Angelo Williams really crushed it. If you go back even further than that, the Rams, the greatest show on turf, was down to their third string running back in Arlen Harris. And Arlen Harris actually had two great weeks in the championship round. So you're always trying to find that lottery ticket, trying to find a spot on your bench for him, and if he hits, it definitely could shoot you up the leaderboards. It's weird because we're talking about the championship round this year. I keep wanting to talk about next year. Maybe that's a comment on how bad my teams are doing. But let's look at next year for tight ends in this tight end premium format that the FFPC has, Football Guys Players Championship. Three tight ends really stand out to me this year as far as being really, really dominant, and that's been Zach Ertz, Rob Gronkowski, and Travis Kelce. If we flash forward to 2018 main event time, who is the first tight end off the board for you, Mike?
I think I'm going to lean towards Zach Ertz on that, Eric, and I'll tell you why. I think a lot of it has to do with Carson Wentz and his ascension into the elite of quarterbacks. I do like Travis Kelce a lot, and I have been known to target him and have him be a difference maker on teams. But I just read something recently that said that he's actually had 7 games where he's had 4 targets or less. And there may be a quarterback change coming in Kansas City. And so that would make me wonder, is that change going to be good for him or bad for him? Gronkowski is obviously someone you're always going to have your eye on. And as long as Tom Brady is the quarterback, he's going to be someone who's drafted high. But injury concerns there, have always plagued him. And so if I'm having to make that decision today, I think I would go Ertz because his quarterback's on the rise. He is still a fairly young and healthy guy. I mean, what did he have, 10 catches over the weekend? I mean, it only seems to be the directional pointing up for him and the Eagles going forward. So if I had to make that decision today, it would be Ertz. But
go ahead.
But in these leagues, in this format, you've got to have your eye on some other tight ends too. Like you want to be looking at guys like Geno Smith and Higbee and guys who could emerge, going back to what we were talking about before, with guys you can get later who may produce value for you that was higher than their draft position.
Yeah, definitely. And I've seen a lot of people over the last couple of years take, you know, it's dependent upon what happens with Delanie Walker and the Titans situation. You never know, like, Jonnu Smith could be a guy that goes in like the 10th, 11th round next year and then ends up being like a top 10 tight end. Who knows? I mean, he's certainly, there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of people who love him. And if the opportunity presents itself in Tennessee next year, that might be I mean, that would obviously be a much better value if he brings home the bacon there than taking Zach Ertz in round one or round two or wherever he would go in this type of format. And I'll say this about Ertz, too. Barron, you know, not only does he have the up-and-coming quarterback in Carson Wentz, but you look at the other receivers on the team. Alshon Jeffrey's going to be a free agent. I mean, Nelson Aguilar has been okay. I mean, he certainly found the end zone quite a bit, but he's more of like a – he's not a possession-type guy. He's a guy – he's a big play-type maker. So is Mac Hollins is the other guy there, Torrey Smith. I mean, he's another deep threat. I mean, Ertz is really the reliable chain mover on that team, and I think it just makes a lot of sense that Ertz is – not only has a more stable quarterback situation than, you know, Travis Kelce does, but the supporting cast in Philadelphia is not near what New England has to flank with Rob Gronkowski, too. So it certainly makes Ertz even more attractive there. Championship round coming up, championship weekend, league championship weekend in week 13, Mike. Lineup decisions are obviously going to be, well, once the waiver wire locks, it's really the only decisions that you have to make going forward is, you know, who to start, who to bench. They become increasingly more important every week. Obviously, they're going to be huge for you, having a top 40 football guys team, having a top 100 main event team. Do you feel these last few weeks of the season that you spend more time analyzing matchups and spending more time on setting those lineup decisions than you do earlier in the year? Or is it just better to go with your gut instinct, that, you know, that initial thought that you have, and not mess around with it too much and really go with your gut? Which side of that spectrum do you normally fall on?
I would say I fall more on the analytical side of it. I think one thing that's important is, if you can, decide your lineups the same way that you were deciding them in week one, in week 14, 15, and 16. You know, if you have a system or a process or rankings that you like to look at, or, you know, your own analysis, just continue to rely on it. And if you're making your decision in week 16 and you're, you know, in the top 10, you know, make that decision the same way that you would if it was week one and you're just trying to get your first victory. It's still just fantasy football. No one else knows you're playing for $250,000. You know, it does. That part of it is, that pressure that you're putting on yourself is all from the contest and not from an analysis of who to start an NFL game. So I would say try to take that pressure out of it for yourself and just decide it the way you would decide any other fantasy football contest, your home, you know, your home league, you know, make your decisions and stick with them. And once they've been made, just go with it and root like hell.
I want to thank you, number one, for doing the show this week. I certainly appreciate it. I do want to ask you one final question, before I let you go. A player that maybe was drafted relatively high that is still playing, that is still healthy, or at least relatively healthy, that you think you might cut bait on because he is not going to be worthwhile keeping on your roster for the next 4 weeks of the season. And then with the waiver wire locking in the main event in the FPC, a player that you want to make sure you're adding off the waiver wire this week in some of your leagues for, like we said, that potential you know, lottery ticket shot to stardom that he could have in the championship round.
Sure. There's a couple of guys that come to mind. Buck Allen is someone who I had on a lot of my teams, but and has helped out on many teams. But I do feel as though he's just not getting the opportunity that he was getting several years back with Woodhead back and Collins kind of emerging. He would be someone who probably isn't going to make it on my roster going forward. Doug Martin is a guy that I took relatively high and really had great expectations for this year. Really thought he was going to be sort of my ace in the hole on several of my teams, and that just hasn't really worked out at all. And he is now even a little bit banged up. And also Jordan Reed, someone who I've loved in years past and has brought me many a success. He just can't seem to get back on the field. And, you know, at this point, I just don't know if even if he was going to be back on the field, whether I'd have the confidence to start him. So those guys on sort of the downside, I think, you know, if I was picking up someone for this week, it's going to be the Chargers defense. You know, the Chargers defense, I think, just looks fantastic. And, you know, I intend to target them going forward as they're playing Cleveland this week and have a fairly favorable matchup schedule, you know, going forward.
Last point I want to make about the Chargers. Josh Gordon, is he going to do anything his first game back? I mean, obviously, you really can't start him with so much on the line, but what are you looking at for him this weekend?
I think, you know, I think it's hard to say, but I think Josh Gordon's effect may more be on Deshaun Kizer and Corey Coleman than it is from himself. If I'm a Corey Coleman owner, I think I would feel even a little more confident starting him. And certainly if I'm a Deshaun Kizer owner, you know, and I was in a position where I had to start a quarterback, maybe that, you know, that normally you wouldn't start, he would be someone who I would think about because the weapons that he's now been provided with are just so much different. As far as Gordon, I mean, tremendous talent, but I have no idea what it's going to look like for him on the field.
It is always an entertaining mystery for the Cleveland Browns, and we add to it again this weekend with the return of Josh Gordon. Listen, Mike, so much fun talking with you today and this week on the High Stakes Lowdown. Good luck this weekend. Good luck in the championship round. You certainly got a few horses in the race. We'll have to see what happens. Hopefully the balls bounce your way, and we will talk to you again real soon, man.
Thanks so much, Eric, and have a great holiday season.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And follow us on Twitter @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.